When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
Welcome in to the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio alongside Andrew Carlson as usual. I didn't go always. As usual.
There we go.
He's on Twitter at Carlson Radio. Josh, our producer, as always, on Twitter at I am Jay Chev. You guys can jump in here on the Twitch line, at twitch.tv/ESPN975. Phone line 713-780-3776 to call and text. And, you know, the Astros, Andrew, lose 2 out of 3 to Milwaukee, and then a day off, and then you play the worst team in baseball.
Oakland is the cure-all to any baseball woes or issues that you may have.
Yeah.
They have,
unless you're Jose Abreu.
Yeah, well, look, we'll get into him a little bit later, but yeah, it was fantastic. Like, the Astros versus the A's, and really anybody versus the A's this season is like, hey, are you in a slump? The A's will fix that for you, no problem. They're absolutely going to be the worst team in baseball history by a wide margin come the end of this season.
Yeah, it's funny that, like, right now, the Astros division is, so the Astros are, what, 3 games back of first place. The A's are a total disaster. I mean, they made, like, little league errors last night.
They looked like my softball team on Sundays. A couple of points last night. Oh, the catcher just like totally missing the pitch.
You might need some new softball players then, buddy.
You know what? I think a couple of the A's might be able to make the cut for our team.
A couple of them?
Just a couple. Maybe not the entire roster. But when all those fly balls were dropping over and left, I was just, man, you legitimately feel bad for the players out there. That's how I felt at that point.
Yeah, look, they are a bad, bad, bad baseball team. It's stunning to watch them, to think what they were. You know, just, was it so 2020, the pandemic season, when they won the division, like, they were a good baseball team really from like 2018 to 2021. Like, they were pushing the Astros. They only beat the Astros in a garbage season that shouldn't really count, but like, they were good. Like, they didn't pay their guys, and then they went Oakland A's. They tore it down to the bare bones. Now they're getting ready to move to what looks like a 30,000 seat stadium in Las Vegas, which is pretty small, to be honest. But, like, I think I get why. I think they're doing it because they know for sure they can fill that in Vegas. And I think it shows that there's some concerns of 81 home games in Vegas. But the Astros last night just straight up, like, they just beat them. And Hunter Brown was absolutely incredible. Like, 2 straight starts, setting a career high in strikeouts. Last night with 10. This kid is absolutely unbelievable.
Do we need to etch his name on the Rookie of the Year trophy already? Because I feel like we're getting to that point where we can start etching his name in there already.
Honestly, it's not like last year. Well, last year you had like Adley Rutschman, Jeremy Peña, Julio Rodriguez. Like, there was a lot of guys in the American League. I keep pretty good tabs on baseball. I couldn't tell you who the next guy would be on this list. I mean, Hunter Brown at this point is, it might be runaway Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, 5-1 already to start the season. ERA, low threes. To get that from someone who is, I understand that he started a few games towards the back end of last year, but is effectively in the rookie season.
Yeah.
He's been phenomenal, man. Like, he's been absolutely phenomenal. And I feel like you do have to put a couple of asterisks by his last couple starts. It is the Oakland A's. So, look, I understand they are a major league team, barely, but what more can you say about the guy other than you had high expectations for him coming into this season, and he has cleared every single bar by a mile?
Well, I think it's actually 3 straight games. He set a career high or I think he tied his career high May 14th with 8 strikeouts. He passed it on the 20th with the Athletics versus the Athletics with 9 strikeouts, got 10 last night. But the thing about Hunter Brown is that, you know, just a couple weeks ago, he finally broke his home run streak. He had gone 55 innings and some change without giving up a home run. He finally gave that up. I think that was the White Sox game.
Yeah.
And then, but the thing about Hunter Brown that's been the most impressive is going into the season, and we've seen bits and pieces of it, right, is that people talked about his control issues. His last 3 games, he's walked 2 batters. He's pitched 18.2 innings, walked 2 batters, and struck out 27 players.
That's the most encouraging thing about his performance early on in this season, is he looks to be a player who can quickly correct issues that appear either from his last start to his next start, or just in general were issues coming into the season. The fact that he's course correcting so quickly bodes incredibly, incredibly well for what seems to be a very, very bright future.
Yeah, it's just, and then last night's game as a whole, look, you get some breaks, like that play in left field that was a single for Kyle Tucker, or actually I don't even know how they scored it now that I think about it, but it was just one of the most embarrassing plays I've seen from a major league team. It reminded me of, I can't remember who the Astros were playing. It might have been the A's. What was the play? Was it Bregman hit a pop-up like 2 or 3 years ago?
Was San Diego at home at Minute Maid.
Right.
It was San Diego at home at Minute Maid. And
it landed like right in front of the pitcher's mound. And
landed at home plate.
No one got it.
And nobody called it, or nobody caught it. And yeah, it was a walk-off hit for Alex Bregman. It traveled 3 feet.
Yes, it reminded me of that play a lot, where it's just like you have 2 guys, they're going for it. Was it the third baseman or a shortstop? He's in foul territory, and then the ball is like 6 feet behind him. It was literally, it's Bad News Bears watching them. So you got to take the breaks where you can get them. But Ryan Pressly, he gets 3 strikeouts in the bottom of the 9th, and the Astros, like, they take advantage of a team that's bad. They do what they should, and when you have a team that is right now, the Rangers are like, they have like the 10th or 12th. It was a lot of teams, but it was like 10 or 12 teams of the most runs scored through 50-some games or through 53 games, or the run differential. The Rangers are a plus 122 on the season.
Whew.
While their pitching might not be for real, and even with DeGrom out, like I don't buy that Nathan Eovaldi is going to be a long-term solution the way he's pitched for them. Andrew Haney, like I just don't buy it. Their bullpen's kind of a disaster, but those guys just smash.
Their lineup's for real. No question.
They spent, $1 billion last offseason in 2022 on Marcus Semien and John Gray and Corey Seager. And like it's worked out really well for them. And the Astros are 3 games back of the division right now. And they're for real. For the first time, besides that pandemic season, I think you have a real team that you're going to be neck and neck with this whole season, because that offense is for real, for real.
This is the most competitive the AL West has been since the Astros dynasty really got rolling.
Totally agree.
Like, the Mariners are above 500 now. Like, don't look now. I'm not saying that the Mariners are going to be competitors at the top of the division, but I think they're going to weasel their way into the wild card race before the season's over. The Angels are sticking around. Obviously, we know the top end talent they have. I don't believe in the rest of their roster, but when you've got 2 guys like Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, who knows what can happen as long as the rest of the roster plays to replacement level. So as far as the division goes, for a very long time, it was the Astros are the best team in baseball, and they get to beat up on a bunch of really, really crappy teams for, you know, 50-odd games a year. That's not happening anymore.
And that's what, to me, is the most impressive part of where the Astros are at today. The Astros, 29-21, 3 games back of the Rangers. And you're talking about a team that has missed Jose Altuve for the entire season except for like 2 or 3 games. Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, Jose Urquidy. You thought you were relying in the season. The idea was Michael Brantley was going to return. Baggy said that he was going to be ready for opening day. And then he's just, who knows if he's ever going to play for the Astros again at this point. The fact that the Astros are where they are right now shows how talented and how deep this team is. And that's where I can't believe someone like Nathaniel Lowe from the Rangers would go on a podcast and say that the division is ours to lose. Like, dude, like, you only lost to Grom. And, that's expected. Like, things you can count on in Major League Baseball. Mike Trout, Jacob deGrom, and Lance McCullers getting hurt. Like, that's all you can count. Oh, Yordan Alvarez smashing home runs. Like, so that's what's so impressive about this team right now, is that through all of it, You know, they have stayed well above 500 now, and they're right there. And look, this division, I think they're still going to win it. But this, I will say, is the most doubt I've ever had in the last 5 years besides the pandemic season, that someone's really going to chase you out of that division title.
You're going to have to work to reel the Rangers in, because last time we were on the air, we think I both expected the Astros to be either tied with the Rangers or at the top of the division come the end of May.
Yeah.
That's clearly not going to be the case. They were 2 games back when we talked last Saturday. They're now 3 games back. And the reality is, you're going to need, in order to reel the Rangers in, as fantastic as your pitching has been, and it's really been what's carried your team thus far in the season, you're going to need your corner infielders to really start hitting. Like, that's what this season is going to come down to for the Astros, for me, in my opinion at least, is that Jose Abreu and Alex Bregman are going to need to be able to share some of the heavy lifting that Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez and hopefully Jose Altuve are going to be doing.
What did you think of the lineup last night? So Dusty rolls out. Pena has a day off. It's expected he's back in the lineup today. So it's Altuve. The top of your lineup is Altuve, Dubon, Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker, Abreu. That's your 1-6. I thought, first blush, I was like, well, that's interesting. Because the second spot for Dubon is where Jeremy Pena had his most success. The team, like, when they put him in the two-hole last year, they really got rolling towards the postseason, obviously ran all the way through the postseason to win the World Series. So, like, that feels like Jeremy Pena's spot at two. It's just he happened to be off last night. So, if the lineup is Altuve, Pena, Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker, it's really an interesting lineup because it's so different than what Dusty's ever done. But what was, like, your first blush reaction to seeing that last night?
I didn't hate it. But that was my initial reaction, is, okay, like you, I was like, okay, this is interesting, and I don't hate it. Would I like to see Kyle Tucker behind Yordan Alvarez? Absolutely. I think I speak for every Astros fan when I say we want Kyle Tucker behind Yordan Alvarez to have that protection around Yordan so pitchers are actually throwing to him. That being said, if we're going to go left, right, left, and we have to alternate in this dusty world, you know?
Sure.
Then I would much prefer Alex Bregman to be the option there over Jose Abreu. I was
totally agree.
I was happy to see Jose Abreu get dropped to 6. Personally, I would keep dropping him, but I understand that's not how Dusty and this team is going to operate, and that's fine. So the one question I did have was Dubon in second. Last year, Dusty did this a lot, where if a player came in for another player, he would just insert them into their spot in the lineup,
yeah,
regardless of the fact of whether they were an equal, you know, talent or not, which was extreme. Like, Dubon batted leadoff for us multiple times last year when Jose Altuve was out or, you know, resting or whatever. And it was like, there's no reason that Dubon should be in the leadoff spot.
Yeah, last year Dubon versus this year Dubon are very different players.
Yes. And who was the guy in the minors that we jettisoned off?
Oh, Hensley?
No. Last season. I'll remember him.
Matijevic?
No. You know what? I'll find it. I'll find it in the break. Don't worry about it.
But with this lineup, there's a couple things of which the way Dusty Baker could handle this going forward. We'll talk about that next. But also, just going back to Hunter Brown here. You know, with Dana Brown as the new GM for the Astros, I think it opens up the eyes and the options for what you could see the Astros do with some of their young core talent. We'll talk about a future contract extension, how quickly you would give one to Hunter Brown next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Well, that's new.
Who is that?
I've heard that voice before.
What was that?
I've heard the voice. You'll hear more of it on Tuesday. Hint, hint. You guys are getting a special treat here if you're listening on the Twitch or on the radio or the app, if the app's working. Because you never know. We got Willie's in here asking questions about Mike Trout. Bleacher Report did this, you know, trade article thing. It's one of those things where it's like, is it a report? Is it Bleacher Report? And they're just speculating. But, you know, there's the stuff that, like, the Angels might sell. And so Willie wants to know that if Mike Trout were to ask for a trade to Houston, duh, yes, is the first answer. But, like, what would you do?
I would say sell the farm just about Would you give up Kyle Tucker for Mike Trout in his current contract?
Oh,
absolutely.
That's a good question.
Like, yeah. I don't think there's a question. You would absolutely give up Kyle Tucker. Mike Trout's under contract for, like, the rest of his career. You are 100% giving up almost whatever it takes outside of Yordan Alvarez to get Mike Trout. Okay, maybe Hunter Brown.
I was going to say, my two untouchable players, and we talked about this once upon a time, I think, on the Killer Bees about Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
As more of a rental. And it is a different conversation, rental versus under contract superstar player. Like, I would not include Hunter Brown in any deal because, to me, he has shown, like, the JV comparisons are not a joke. Hunter Brown looks like he could be the best pitcher on the staff, which is saying something because you have Christian Javier and Framber Valdez, and Hunter Brown looks like he could be better than both those guys. Like, he's nasty, nasty. I wouldn't trade Christian Javier. Obviously, Yordan Alvarez.
I think about Javier, to be honest with you. Just because of the velocity dip at the start of this season, I have a couple concerns about him moving forward.
In the Trout conversation, yes. In the Ohtani conversation, no.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for Trout.
I'm not giving up a guy that's already locked up to the Angels for a guy that the Astros are going to lose in 3 months. And to be honest, I wonder if the Astros will try to get into that Ohtani conversation. I don't think they'll have enough pull. But, like, if you look back to 2019 or 2020, I can't remember which year it was, and the reported trade that Chandler Rome finally had all the details not that long ago about what the trade was supposed to be for Bryce Harper.
Yeah, 2019.
The trade's a joke. The fact that, like, the Nationals agreed to it, when you look back at it, there's not a single big league player. There's, like, one big league player. It's not like the Brewers trade that you made for Scumbag Fires and Carlos Gomez. Like, you still have the guy that the Astros faced on Monday was in that trade from the Astros. Josh Hader is still dominating in baseball. Like, the trade for Bryce Harper is incredible. But, like, yeah, look, if they said that we want Kyle Tucker and you're going to get Mike Trout, do it.
You couldn't say no to that.
I wouldn't want to give up much more, to be honest, because Kyle's healthy.
It's a fair point. He's younger.
Like, Kyle Tucker. I don't think Corley is good. So I don't think people really want
Well, the Corley. Angels also already have, like, three good catcher prospects. So yeah. The position that you're most stacked at in your – well, actually, I guess center field is probably where you're most stacked at in the minor league system now. But the position where you have the most, like, top ends, you know, projectable, easy AAA talent would be catcher. And the Angels don't want any of
that. Yeah, and I just don't think – and I don't think Jim Crane would – I think he'd rather try to – if really that conversation started – I would almost make you revisit the Kyle Tucker contract stuff. I'm like, we talked about it last week on the show. I think it's time to pay Kyle Tucker because Jim Crane has now shown with Jose Abreu that he's willing to pay a guy $19.5 million to be 36, 37, and 38-year-old player on your team. So if you sign Kyle Tucker today to a 10-year contract, he hits free agency at 36. So if you're willing to sign Jose Abreu, I don't get why you wouldn't pay Kyle Tucker an extra $10 million a year. When he's a Gold Glove player, he's a 30-30 guy. Like, when he's got a shot any year, in my opinion, to be an MVP. Like, will he ever win one? I think the answer is yes. Like, especially if Shohei Ohtani leaves the American League and it actually, like, makes the award attainable again, I think we'll see a point where Alvarez and Tucker win MVPs.
Now, the counter argument to that, though, would be he's just seen what Jose Abreu is now currently doing at that more advanced age, and that will make him more leery of giving out any sort of contract to anyone close to that age bracket.
100%. So maybe that's where you try to go. Maybe it's only an 8-year deal and you're trying to get him out at 34. And, you know, there's some wiggle room here. Like, there are ways to be creative, you know, with this deal to where Dana Brown should be aggressive. And, you know, and we saw last year, Dana Brown signed Spencer Strider to a 7-year, $92 million deal. And Spencer Strider is already one of the best pitchers in the National League. Is it too early to buy out free agency years from Hunter Brown?
After this season, no. I would let him get through this season first, just because I would like to see how his season goes with a full major league workload upon him and on that arm, shoulder, whatever, and how his body reacts to that. And look, if he makes it through the entire season 100% healthy, goes through a good postseason run, there's no question in my mind that you should be looking to lock him up in the same way that you've done with Yordan Alvarez, that Dana Brown did with Spencer Strider, that you've done with Christian Javier. Buy out those free agency years, as many as he is willing to let you.
Yeah, and look, and so he signed the contract. This is 6 years, 75. I thought it was like 90 million. There's no way this article's correct. And maybe I'm wrong. It says they signed it on October 11th, which is interesting because like that's the end. That's that during the postseason. Like, so like you can wait a little bit and yeah, no, 7 years up to $92 million for Spencer Strider. If you look at Hunter Brown, you say, okay, pitch through the entire season. You get to October, you have those conversations. Strider was a rookie last year. I think there's a really reasonable chance that by the end of this season, Jeremy Peña and Hunter Brown are both locked up to long-term contracts, just like we saw the Braves did last year with Michael Harris, their young center fielder, and Spencer Strider. Like, I think that could be the move that they make, honestly, this season.
Yeah, to answer your question, that it was smack dab in the middle of the postseason. The World Series ended on November 5th last year.
Yeah,
so that's smack dab in the middle of the postseason.
That's bizarre to give someone a fat contract during the playoffs.
They got eliminated early, so.
Oh, that's maybe that's why. But yeah, I would feel comfortable paying him right now. I know you can say, do you want to be conservative and be worried about, you know, Tommy Johns and Lance McCullers and the fallout from that? I get it. But, you know, these GMs, they just don't think that way. And I don't think you can. I don't think you can operate under the assumption that everyone's going to be Lance McCullers and Forrest Whitley. You have to go under the assumption that most people are going to be, you know, have Tommy John for a year and then back and be really good. And, like, it's just the reality of baseball that, like, Luis Garcia is going to have Tommy John. Hunter Brown's at some point going to have Tommy John. And you're going to lose him for a season. It's just kind of where we are. And you just have to hope that they're not Lance.
Yeah. I think with almost all pitchers at this point, this is going to be really sad to say, but it feels like a matter of just when and not really if when it comes to Tommy John, right? It almost feels like at some point, every single pitcher is going to go under the knife on their elbow at some point in time. It's just a matter of when that is during their career. And especially with all the off speed and all the strain in general that's being put on these young guys' elbows these days. If you offered me the option to say, hey, you get to sign Hunter Brown right now or you don't sign him at all, I'm definitely 100% buying out those years right now.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the world that we're going to be living in. And more conservative than you, I would like to see him finish out an entire major league season before I'm willing to hand him that sort of bag.
And I get it. Like, I just and I think that towards the end of the season is when, or in the offseason, like, is when it happens. I think Jeremy Peña, it's likely you could see that deal happen during the season. And maybe not, because, like, you do have to worry about, look, Fromber, you know, Kyle Tucker, Altuve, Bregman, they've got some big decisions to make. Like, there's no doubting that. And every time you pay a guy, it means it's less likely that someone else is going to stay. And I think Altuve is going to retire a Houston Astro. I do not think Alex Bregman will retire a Houston Astro. I lean towards Kyle Tucker will not play here after the next 2 or 3 years, whatever his contract is up. I think Framber Valdez will. Like, I think that's kind of where I line up with everything.
Yeah, I believe that there are certain guys that have that sort of feel of the Astros just for whatever reason are going to lean towards keeping them around in the organization just by the way they operate. And I'm 100% with you. As much as I would love to see Kyle Tucker an Astro for the next 7 or 8 seasons, I just don't see it.
I don't either. And it's funny, it's because the one thing that, like, is how long can the Astros just keep replenishing? Like, do they have, like, this deep, deep farm system so they can make these incredible trades all the time? No, not anymore. But Drew Gilbert, like, that's your Kyle Tucker replacement.
100%. Like, that's what I guarantee you, that is how the Astros front office is viewing Drew Gilbert. He's probably going to be up in the major leagues, splitting time at outfield positions next season. I would be shocked if he's not up in the majors in a season and a half. Like, I genuinely believe he is going to be playing in the outfield for the Astros next season.
I think there's still a chance that when they announce Brantley's out for the season at some point here in the next month, because I think that's coming, I think there's still a chance that they push him to the majors this year.
Whose spot would he take?
Hey, left field.
I mean, like, potentially.
Jake Myers, Drew Gilbert, Kyle Tucker. Like, that's your almost everyday outfield.
Someone's having to get traded if that's the case.
Yeah, and look, and now the caveat to that is Corey Jolks. That dude, man, he just rakes.
He can hit. He can't take a lot of pitches. He's only okay in the field, but man, he can put his bat to the baseball. And
yeah,
that's a very valuable skill to have.
Yeah, he's just so he's interesting. All right, let's see. Do you think Dusty Baker sticks to the lineup?
No.
Oh, wrong.
Oh, he stuck with the exact same lineup.
Except for obviously Peña. So okay. Here's your lineup. Altuve at second, Peña at short, Alvarez in left, Bregman at third, Tucker in right, Abreu at first, McCormick at center, Corey Jolks DHing, and Martin Maldonado is your catcher with Framber Valdez on the mound.
Okay.
Is this the new lineup?
There you go, Dusty. All right.
I mean,
look, I liked it more than the previous lineup, so it's improvement, and I can't complain about improvement.
Is at some point McCormick and Jolks going to pass Abreu? Is Jose Abreu batting eighth in the next like couple weeks?
He's going to become the new Martin Maldonado if he doesn't pick things up. Could you imagine a scenario where we sort of already are there, where you would rather Martin Maldonado be up at the plate than Jose Abreu?
Here we are, because we're there. Like, I don't get it. I text my cousin. He's a White Sox fan. I'm like, explain it to me like I'm five. Like, did you see this? And he's like, nope. All my friends that are White Sox fans, like, this is a fall. And like, and Bear Brother 123 on Twitch just said it. I wonder if he's hurt. And honestly, for the first time ever, I hope he's hurt.
That would be a better explanation than he's washed and he can't hit anymore. If he's hurt for the Astros, that's an infinitely better explanation than, oh, well, the guy's just like doesn't have it anymore and this contract is going to be a complete and total albatross. If he's hurt, at least that points to a solution at some point in the future.
100%. All right, DeAndre Hopkins, yesterday, he got cut. He was not traded like many people thought he would be. Of course, there are people that want him back just like they want Clowney and Harden and Patrick Beverly back. So would you be interested in a reunion with DeAndre Hopkins? If he was, what would you pay the guy? And where is really the best fit for Hopkins? We'll talk about it next year on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside The Bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
So, George, Andrew Carlson here. We got a lot of Bregman versus Abreu hate going on here in the chat. People think that everyone's being too mean to Abreu. We hurt Jose Abreu's feelings and that Bregman's not good enough. Duh.
Well, Bregman hasn't been good enough either. It's not an either-or thing. They've both been bad. It's just that Abreu's been, by a good margin, worse.
Look, if you look at it, like, both the guys are playing. Andrew said it in the first segment. For the Astros to really be what they need to be, you need the corner infield guys to start producing at a much higher level. But the one big difference, honestly, with the Bregman versus Abreu is that, you know, Bregman's OPS is 100 points higher, and he's got 6 home runs, and Jose Abreu hasn't hit a home run since like August of last year.
I'm legitimately concerned that Jose Abreu might not hit a home run in an Astros uniform. That's where I'm at.
So it's really just like, it's not that it's anti-Abreu versus pro-Bregman. It's that you also kind of like get the benefit of the doubt when you achieve something of value, in my opinion, in this city. Like, I'm surprised that there's anyone that like is that team thinks like everyone's so anti-Abreu versus being anti-Bregman. But Bregman gets the benefit of the doubt that Jose Abreu doesn't, because Alex Bregman has won 2 World Series on this team. Now, look, because the problem with the Alex Bregman conversation is that people don't like to have it in reality, okay? People don't want to have the Alex Bregman conversation that he's not good. And when you point to the fact that the only time he was an MVP candidate is when they were smashing trash cans and hitting 40 home runs, it's just reality. But then it's going to be, oh, Joe, you're from Chicago. Like, what's wrong with you? But, like, it's just the reality. Like, Alex Bregman hasn't been a good baseball player since the trash cans went away.
Don't forget the juice baseballs.
Like, and juice baseballs. Like, sorry. Like, so we're not ignoring that Alex Bregman's not good, but he gets the benefit of the doubt because he's actually accomplished something in this city, and he has bad salsa.
Yeah, the salsa's awful. And he's also had flashes this season, right? It's not like Alex Bregman has been awful the entirety of the year. Like, obviously, he hasn't been good enough or anywhere near it.
Yeah.
But there have been, you know, weak stretches where Alex Bregman looks like that Alex Bregman we've seen in the past. We've seen nothing of the sort from Jose Abreu. There hasn't even been a two-game stretch where Jose Abreu has looked like Jose Abreu. So yeah. Sorry that he's getting more criticism, but he deserves more criticism.
Look, and part of the Abreu thing that's not even – it's not even necessarily his fault. It's that the way the Astros approach their offseason with – I agree with firing James Click. Like, if it really – you know, if it really came down to, like, Starling Marte and, like, it was go get Starling Marte and he balked on the price – and then, like, Jim Crane was not okay with that because he knew they needed help at center field. You know, it's just clear, like, their personalities, like, baseball-wise, didn't click. I get why you move on. But when you do that and you go into having, you know, Jim Crane, Jeff Bagwell, Bill Farkas, and other nobodies making these decisions, the guys that were signed by them are going to get bigger criticism. That's why we're that's why people are focused in on Abreu and Montero and Brantley. It's not necessarily because of who they are. Like, it's not personal. It's actually more of a reflection of the front office at the time than it is the players themselves, to be honest.
Yeah, if Jack Easterby was the one behind signing a player for the Texans, that player was going to get more criticized. Like, yeah. That's just how it works. If there is a nebulous situation in the front office and that front office makes decisions to bring players in,
yeah.
And we've seen it with the Texans for a very long time, over these last 5 years. Like, it isn't until recently where their situation has become relatively settled in the front office. Before then, moves got criticized all of the time because you were bringing in these relative, like, nobodies or crap players, and, like, that's just going to be the reality. If the situation in the front office is not settled, those moves are going to draw more criticism. That's just how it is.
It's just, it's just the reality of it. It's the same thing with James Harden when he signs here this offseason. Like, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a Fertitta move. It's going to be just like these were Crane Bagwell moves, just like it was McNair's decision. You know, it was Cal's decision to keep Jack around. And we'll talk about this guy now, help trade DeAndre Hopkins for a second round pick and David Johnson.
I mean, the Texans won the trade now, right? Dude. Since the Cardinals cut him.
So when
the
I
Texans
broke,
won the trade.
So when I broke the news yesterday on the Killer Bees, I said Jack Easterby was right. DeAndre Hopkins has been cut. And look, to be honest, like, it's still an all-time bad trade.
Oh, 100%.
And it's mostly an all-time bad trade because of what happened like 2 weeks later. That Stephon Diggs was traded for a first-round pick that turned into the best wide receiver in the NFL, Justin Jefferson. The fact that like he got traded for a first after Hopkins is blasphemous. Like, and Stephon Diggs, yes, he's never DeAndre Hopkins, but we all kind of knew it was the going rate. And then like they butchered it. But DeAndre Hopkins has been cut. Titus Howard and Laremy Tunsil, very active on Twitter. They're very upset right now that Pro Football Focus said they're not in the top 10 of tackle duos in the NFL.
Is Laremy going to pin that one too?
They're both tweeting away. But they were both tweeting away yesterday, tweeting at DeAndre Hopkins, asking if he was coming home. I think there's like a 0% chance, 1% chance. I don't see a scenario where DeAndre Hopkins at this point in his career goes, I want to be a Houston Texan. I would imagine, you know, he said he wants to win. He said he wants a good quarterback.
He specifically said he's past the part in his career where he's going to play with a young / rookie quarterback. He has specifically said that. That should rule out the Texans right then and there. Sorry. I don't care what you think about C.J. Stroud, and I really like the pick of C.J. Stroud. I think he's going to be a good quarterback in this league. DeAndre Hopkins isn't going to wait around for C.J. Stroud to become that good quarterback.
Yeah, it's just they're not at that point yet right now. Look, they're going to have over 100 – right now it's projected $124 million in cap space next year. The Texans get their franchise wide receiver next year. You had the chance potentially to get Marvin Harrison Jr. with your own draft pick if you were awful. That's going to be off the table. But it's going to be eyeing down T. Higgins – saying what's the length and deal to bring Mike Evans back to the city. You know, like, he's going to be a free agent. That's another guy I would be targeting. But, like, I think every Texans fan's expectation should be that T. Higgins is signed to a massive contract next offseason. You just don't need DeAndre Hopkins right now, and he doesn't want to come here. He's not coming.
Yeah. And frankly, in order, at least for this season alone, you don't really have the money to pay him anyway.
Yeah, you don't. You have like, they have like a couple million dollars in cap
space. Yeah, so like, we have it right here. Like, if you look at the effective cap space, which is what the Texans are going to have after all their draft picks are signed, you're going to have like $2.9 million in effective cap space. I'm sorry. I don't care how much DeAndre Hopkins loves the city of Houston. He's not coming to play for this iteration of the Houston Texans for under $3 million.
No.
That is just not going
to
happen.
No, he's going to try to get paid. He's going to find a way to get to win on both sides.
Yeah.
He's going to try to find a way to get a team that's ready to win, a quarterback that can get him the ball, but also try to find a team that can pay him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's not a ton of those out there. You know, I know, so he was on a podcast recently, when the I Am Athlete podcast, I think it was Brandon Marshall's, and he mentioned directly that he would love to play with Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, or Justin Herbert. Like, those are the caliber of quarterbacks that he's looking at. Now, Justin Herbert, no shot. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, they have Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Quentin Johnson, Josh Palmer, who they drafted 2 years ago. Like, they're pretty set. I don't really think the Eagles will be in play.
I couldn't imagine it. They've got so many other things to figure out contractually over the next couple of seasons. I would be surprised if they're outlaying those resources for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I think Baltimore, to me, is the most logical of, like, of the teams that he listed in that interview. You know, it's like, they are a team, like, they've added OBJ, they drafted Zay Flowers, they have Rashad Bateman, but, like, they don't have a ton of talent. Like, DeAndre Hopkins is the best wide receiver on that team. The second he walks in the building, Todd Monken, the offensive coordinator from Georgia, who's now the OC in Baltimore, says they're going to pass more. Like, I think Baltimore makes the most sense.
And there were some whispers earlier on this offseason about Baltimore sort of sounding out a trade for Hopkins when the Cardinals were trying to cut loose.
Yeah,
so,
Chiefs obviously make a ton of sense.
The Chiefs make a ton of sense, but again,
no money.
The money is going to be the issue there.
They're now, negative.
Now, the Chiefs have managed to find a way to scrounge out money out of thin air multiple times, so I would not put it past Veach & Co. to figure a way to do that.
Yeah.
But I think you're right that the Ravens seem like the most logical marriage of, they'll be able to spend a little bit of cash to bring him in, offer him the quarterback that he wants, and a competitive roster to try and continue winning right now.
And I'll tell you what.
They're them or the Cowboys, to be honest.
Cowboys are the betting favorite on some of the offshore book sites, the offshore sites, as the number one team. That's interesting. CeeDee Lamb, DeAndre Hopkins, Brandon Cooks. Like, that's pretty solid.
That's a great room.
I did find it really interesting that, like, he didn't mention Deshaun.
You know the Browns are going to throw their hat in the ring, though.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're the Browns, like, you have Amari Cooper, well, Elijah Moore, who you just traded for. You have David Bell, who you drafted last year, who, like, he might be an okay player, but he's almost like Tank Dell size. And then you add Hopkins to that mix, like, it makes a lot of sense. I feel like the Cleveland would be on there. I'm just surprised he didn't mention them.
I am as well, and I wonder if some of that goes to how he feels about maybe whatever off-field issues have happened with Deshaun. I don't know how DeAndre Hopkins feels about all of that, but
yeah.
To me it feels like DeAndre has clearly listed, like, basically almost every single quarterback that you would throw in a potential, like, tier one. And maybe Deshaun doesn't really fall on the list. He's played with him before.
The one guy that, like, the one team I threw out yesterday that I think would be really interesting is Detroit. Like, they are primed to win the NFC North. Jameson Williams is going to be out for the first six games of the season, serving his gambling suspension because he apparently can't read the collective bargaining agreement. Well, he admitted he didn't know the rules, that he never read them. Genius.
But you don't have to worry about that when you're playing football at Alabama.
No, you don't. Just only in the NFL when you get suspended for gambling. But, like, Detroit makes a lot of sense. Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, DeAndre Hopkins.
They've got the money to spend.
Too bad Jared Goff's their quarterback. All right, speaking of quarterbacks, people are all up in a tizzy because this weekend or this week, OTAs were underway when the first team rolled out. Davis Mills took the first team reps. What does it mean? We talk about it next here on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Oh, it's The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George, Andrew Carlson. Andrew might have just committed an HR violation during the break. We'll see.
No one will hear it. It's not on any record. I don't know what could have possibly happened.
That's true. All right, so obviously there's been a lot of stuff going on at the station that, you know, we talked about, you know, off the air. You know, we're not going to get involved in.
Back from suspension, apparently, after the past 3 days.
But we did get this question, and we're going to answer it anyways. And we're going to just try not to get people to come after us. So, but it's a fair question. But we'll answer it. You guys have questions about the station, go ahead. 7436. If you had to make a new show using current ESPN 97 hosts, 97.5 host, who would be on the show?
Jeremy Branham, Cody Stutes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
No question. That is number one.
You're talking World War III every single day. I mean, like, it'd be like First Take, almost in a way where it's just like so much screaming and yelling, but you can't look away because you don't know what's going to happen next.
Now, I don't want to spoil anything, but there might be a pseudo First Take type video promo in the works.
Ooh.
Featuring one Cody Stutes and one Jeremy Branham.
That's interesting because I wasn't aware of that one.
Far away in the works. Like, it's an idea that has been pitched.
I like that. I'm trying to think who I'd like to hear John with. Honestly, just because of maybe the beef for
John and Jake?
Maybe I want to hear John and Jake for a week.
That would be a very, very stark contrast of Jake, who is like your quintessential like radio professional, like John, who is the godfather of Houston sports radio.
It's like, putting like a 25-year-old Jake, sorry, I don't know how old you are, 29-year-old Charlie Pulillo with John Granato.
Yeah, and John's just a little more loose, you know?
Yeah.
And they have very different styles. Both of them work, but I would be very interested to see that mix.
Yeah, Jeremy Cody would be...
That's number one on my list by pretty wide margin.
No, I think that would be very good. I kind of would like to see how Lance would handle BK for a day. Like, it might just drive him insane.
Oh, 100%.
Even though he just got introduced to the way that BK says words.
Stage him.
Okay, so I didn't know that.
Podium.
So I didn't know when I got here, that was a shtick.
So every once in a while, when you're away from the show with BK, it slips in. So it's become, like, so bad that it's actually affected his normal conversation. It's gone from a bit on the show or a bit of his broadcasting to something that slips into his normal everyday speech. Mm. But for the most part, he's able to separate the two. And if you pay very, very close attention on the Wheelhouse, every once in a while, he forgets to pronounce something in some idiotic fashion.
Yeah, it would be I can see that because obviously I couldn't listen in my past job life. Because we were going head to head, so it's like I didn't know. So when I first got here, I was like, "Oh, I don't really get it." And then I was like, "You know what? I met BK for the first time, and I was like, it's a bit." And I was like,
"It makes sense.
It makes a lot more sense now." Paul, we got Gallant and PC here. They might kill each other.
See, I just don't know how well Gallant would mesh with anybody. Like, and that could be part of the fun, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but well, Gallant, you have two solo hosts, and Patrick and Paul.
That's actually number two on my list.
Oh, really? Like, Patrick and Paul, like, two solo hosts, one-on-one. Like, they might fight. They might have to fight for airtime.
Gallant's personality with PC's personality would certainly be a fun clash there. Like, 100%. Man. Like, they see things in completely opposite ways. It's just, man, I don't know if, like, you would ever be able to go to break with that show.
Not on time. All right, so Davis Mills took the first team reps. OTAs. And, you know, then people like turn like his like competing for the starting job soundbite into like some big ordeal. It's not. Okay. He is doing his job. He is competing to win the job. He is a loser if his goal is not to win the job.
Mm-hmm.
So like, of course he's going to say he's trying to win the job. Just like Joe Espada is going to say he thinks Jose Abreu is going to turn around. He might not actually mean it, but he's going
to
say it.
What else is he supposed to say? Yeah, CJ's going to come in and be the starter. I'm going to support him the best that I can. No shot that he would
like,
say
you're
that.
Not Chase Daniels. Like, you're like, very rarely does someone, like, do you admit defeat? Like, Mitch Trubisky has admitted defeat. He has signed a new contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers, to which he is going to permanently be Kenny Pickett's backup. Like, even Andy Dalton, Case Keenum said it on the bench, like, 2 weeks ago now, that he's coming in to compete. Like, Andy Dalton is there to compete in Carolina with Bryce Young. Like, until a quarterback is actually established, you're there to compete for a job. And no one is established here. Do I think there's any chance Davis Mills is going to win the job? I hope not. I'm concerned because I think that CJ will be the starting quarterback unless he can't comprehend the playbook.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the only way that, like, you won't see. Because the one thing I would imagine D'Amico has done is gotten advice from his fellow, like, former 49ers coaches. And the things that have really, you know, hurt Mike McDaniel in Miami and Robert Saleh in New York is that Zach Wilson didn't learn the Jets playbook well enough, and Tua Tagovailoa didn't learn the Dolphins playbook. And Tua admitted it. So, like, if CJ can't learn the playbook and can't learn Slowik's offense, I get why you don't start him. You just have to hope that, like, that these S2 tests, whatever, doesn't translate to learning a playbook.
I don't believe that there's any real shot that CJ Stroud isn't the starter come week one, but I do understand why fans sort of threw their hands up in the air at him not taking reps with the ones a little bit. I do understand D'Amico and the team's explanation saying, hey, basically everybody's just learning the offense, and this is the most effective way for everybody to learn the offense. It's not really a ones or twos thing. It's just every single player is learning the offense. So I can accept that explanation.
Yeah.
But you look at every other first-round quarterback, they're all taking reps with the ones. Anthony Richardson, taking reps with the ones. Bryce Young, taking reps with the ones. Like, these other quarterbacks that were drafted in the first rounds, they're all taking reps with the guys that they're expected to start with come week one of the season.
Yeah.
And, look, if we come training camp and CJ Stroud still doesn't seem to be any closer to taking more reps with the first-team players, I'm going to be more concerned.
Yeah, my guess is that training camp will open with Davis Mills as the starting quarterback, and then by the end of the training camp, CJ will be... he'll be the quarterback. Look, because you're trying to win football games. Like, that is their goal. The signings they made this offseason, trading for Shaq Mason, signing Dalton Schultz, you know, signing Robert Woods, Devin Singletary, like, trading in the draft capital you did to go get Will Anderson. You know, their goal may not be internally, you know, publicly it will be to make the playoffs. Internally, it's probably, hey, look, let's get close to 500. Let's get as close to 500 as we can. Let's double our win total from last year, which would be, honestly, that's a crazy accomplishment, like, to go from 3 to 6 wins. Like, that's their goal, and they know that CJ Stroud is, like, the way to get that done, for sure. All right, so yesterday, Kelly Eco from The Athletic was on the Killer Bees, and they asked him, gut feeling, is James Harden back on the Houston Rockets? He said yes, but then the contract is what's interesting, and he threw out an idea that wasn't a 4-year max deal. Would you take James Harden back? 2 years, $70 million. We talk about it next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Sports talk in Houston is terrible, except for ESPN 97.5. Never listen to any other station. ESPN 97.5 is not terrible, and that's why I love these guys, knuckleheads.